This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail?
So last night, there were a number of town halls on CNN having to do with climate change. And you heard a lot of the talking points that we've heard from the campaign just all condensed into a 45-minute town hall event. You heard the people calling for bans on just about everything. We're talking about straws to burgers. I guess they don't want you eating anymore. They don't want you having a nice cold beverage with a straw. Okay, fine. All of that stuff is generally goofy, but it's not all that meaningful, right? We don't get as passionate as we should about something like that because it just sounds crazy. And we know that the vast majority of people out there aren't saying, oh, okay, yes, let's ban eating burgers. Let's ban air travel. No one is actually going to get behind that position. And so you end up saying to yourself, okay, that's a little bit frivolous. Let's just move on. But Bernie Sanders said something yesterday that was so incredibly offensive. Incredibly offensive. That it's shocking a lot of people, myself included. I am shocked that I heard Bernie Sanders essentially take a position that abortion should be used to control population growth. Here's the question he was asked, because it's incredibly important to hear that context.
I think the answer is yes. And the answer has everything to do with the fact that women in the United States of America, by the way, have a right to control their own bodies and make reproductive decisions.
Now, obviously, the question was not part of that clip by accident. The question was, do you think we should be talking about population control as it relates to women's reproductive health?
And the Mexico City Agreement, which denies American aid to those organizations around the world that are that allow women to have abortions or even get involved in birth control, to me is totally absurd. So I think, especially in poor countries around the world, where women do not necessarily want to have large numbers of babies, and where they can have the opportunity through birth control to control the number of kids they have, something I very, very strongly support.
So his point about birth control is one that I think we can all have an honest conversation about, but it is morally reprehensible to talk about abortion as a means to control population. The cavalier way that some folks on the left talk about abortion is disturbing. I'm pro-life. I'm pro-life because I err on the side of life beginning at conception. I have no idea when it starts. I have no clue whatsoever. I don't want to pretend to know when life begins, and I'm not going to pretend to claim the science can tell you definitively. This is a position of faith. I err on the side of life beginning at conception, and someone as pro-life in that regard as I am, listening to someone like Bernie Sanders talk about it in this way, is morally reprehensible, and it should shock everybody. And it's the exact type of language used by folks who want to continue to go down this path of abortion for whatever reason you deem necessary, because we believe categorically in a woman's right to choose. So if they wanted to abort a child because they found out the baby was going to be a girl, you're okay with that? Well, I do. I wouldn't want them to. Well, are you in favor of that or not? Because you're saying that you support it in all regards based on your belief that a woman has the right to choose. Are you comfortable with that? Are you comfortable at a point where we're able to determine whether or not the child is going to have brown hair or black hair or red hair, that they would choose, a woman would choose to abort a child based on that? I'm not comfortable with that. And I'm not comfortable with that beyond simply believing or not knowing when life begins, but erring on the side of life. It's disgusting. And every single time conversations like this happen in such a big way in front of so many people, they're setting themselves back. I do not believe the person who is even pro-choice, the average person who's pro-choice, whether or not they're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or I don't know what I am, there's no way that listening to someone talk about abortion in that way is going to advance their cause. It is deeply, deeply reprehensible, and he should apologize for that position. Now, of course, he's not going to. If anything, there are going to be other crazy people on Twitter and on Facebook cheering this on. This is how far to the left this group of Democrats have gone. I don't think Bernie Sanders or the current contenders for the nomination from the Democratic side. I don't think on this topic or a lot of topics, I don't think that they are an accurate reflection of the greater Democratic base. I don't believe that about Democrats. That's why this election is going to be a lot easier for Donald Trump to win than a lot of folks seem to think over on the left side. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on Planet Sawant?
So Shama Sawant has accused Sound Transit of intentionally targeting students of color with fare enforcement on light link rail. It is a disgusting and completely baseless accusation. The allegations come after an activist in the community. He's a substitute teacher by the name of Jesse Hagopian. He posted a photo, a single photo, one photo of one student interacting with a fare enforcement officer, and he wanted to pretend that fare enforcement officers were specifically going after brown and black students for fare enforcement to make sure that they've paid to get on their light link rail ride. He didn't post two photos. The one photo he posed didn't have multiple students in it. It was one person. He started a rumor that Shama Sawant quickly jumped on because that's what Shama Sawant does. Sound Transit said, no. We didn't single out a single kid. We didn't ticket a single student. They said on Twitter, hours after the controversy started to bud, to be clear, Sound Transit is not ticketing students on light link rail today. They went on to say that, quote, no riders of any age are ever ticketed without getting a warning within the previous 12 months. But today, and this part's important, folks, today we are not even issuing the formal warnings to students. And yet Shama Sawant had the audacity to go out there on Twitter and start this controversy because she plays into that kind of hate and fear-mongering. That's how she presents herself, because that's how she stays in power. Or at least that's how she thinks she stays in power. Shama Sawant's brand is not what it once was. She is wearing a lot of people out. She didn't come close to getting the support in the primary election that she had expected, that she had hoped for. She is a weakened incumbent. And she's weakened because she pulls stunts like this with abandon. She does not care the impact that she is having on the greater Seattle community. She doesn't care at all. She loves doing stuff like this because it gets her attention, and she is drawn to that kind of attention. This is despicable. There are so many reasons to call out Sound Transit. On this station, we have a laundry list of things we don't like about Sound Transit. The fact that they're incapable of completing a project on time or on budget. The fact that they try to railroad Dick's Drive-In and the Lowe's and the Starbucks in the city of Kent. The fact that they almost completely ignore every community outside of Seattle Central. The fact that they have a leader who is so bad, they've had to hire a part-time coach for him so that he would stop being verbally abusive to staff members. There are a lot of problems with Sound Transit. With that said, I'm not going to baselessly accuse or pretend that there's any evidence whatsoever to claim that they're purposefully targeting students of color. I think that kind of accusation is dangerous. It's not just false. It's not just a dirty smear. It's dangerous. Because now you're going to have a whole bunch of students of color who feel like they are being targeted when a fare enforcement officer goes up to them with legitimate reason. I've been on light link rail several times when fare enforcement officers have been on. They ask every single person to show proof that they paid to get on the light rail. You know why? Because a lot of people choose not to pay. That's called theft. They're in the business of preventing that kind of theft. I've seen them give passes to virtually every single person that they interacted with. In fact, the last time I was on a light link rail, I was going to SeaTac, and I saw them interact with three students, three girls, as I recall, all students of color. One of them didn't pay. She pretended that, oh, I thought I had already paid. Like, it was very clear that she was lying, and he knew. And he turned to her and said, listen, if you could, please just don't do this again. And then he moved on. To pretend that these folks are going around specifically targeting black and brown students, shame on you. Shame on us if we allow this smear to go unchallenged simply because we don't like Sound Transit. So do me a favor and help me spread word. Put a spotlight on this story. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'm going to send you a link to my story for you not just to read, but to post on your Twitter feed, to post on your Facebook wall, your LinkedIn page, email it to friends and family. Let us call this nonsense out for what it is. This is the worst kind of fear-mongering. And it's coming from a person in a position of leadership who does not deserve to be there. This will help get her out of office in this upcoming general election. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770. Twitter.com/JasonRANTZ if you want to give me a follow. Go behind the scenes of the show and have some conversations with me about all these stories. Twitter.com/JasonRANTZ. Find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So there were plenty of opportunities for Democrats to take some reasonable positions on energy policy yesterday on CNN, but I'm still struggling to find exactly when they did that. Joining me on the line with his conservative environmental take is our friend Benji Bakri. He's the president and founder of the American Conservation Coalition. Benji, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, great to be on.
So Elizabeth Warren comes out pretty hard against nuclear energy. And in what world does that make sense?
It makes zero sense. The Democratic Party switching more and more away from nuclear energy is completely unrealistic because there's no way to reduce carbon emissions without nuclear energy. And reducing carbon emissions also will take natural gas. And that's something that even more Democrats are against. And, you know, Elizabeth Warren and many other folks on the debate stage last night coming out adamantly against nuclear, they're not serious about climate change. They're not serious about reducing emissions, and they're not realistic about how we can fix the problem of climate change and rising emissions globally. So it is pretty disappointing to see that. The only candidate that really came out in favor of it was Cory Booker, and him sharing his story about how he came around on nuclear is something that I think a lot of other Democrats needed to pay attention to.
So what's the case for nuclear energy from an environmentalist standpoint?
So nuclear energy is really the only energy source that's 100% clean that can take a large portion of the energy in the United States. Right now, solar and wind and other forms of clean energy are great to reduce emissions, but they aren't large scale. You can't power an entire community, an entire state, an entire country, or an entire globe on just solar and wind. And embracing that for the Democratic Party is basically virtue signaling, because they're great, again, they're great sources of energy, the technology is getting better, and at some point they might be large scale enough to power a large population, but at this point they're not. Nuclear, on the other hand, can do that. And despite a lot of the stereotypes that are very much warranted about nuclear energy, it actually is, by most studies, scientific studies, the most safe energy source in the globe. You couldn't have said that 50 years ago, but you can say that today. So the Democratic Party is kind of living in the past in terms of the embracing of nuclear energy and is buying into some of the stereotypes that just aren't true anymore.
Warren also got into the whole banning other things. Kamala Harris wants to ban pretty much everything, including straws. You got Pete Buttigieg talking about eating less hamburgers. What impact does that have on the election? It just doesn't seem like that would speak to your average person.
No, and the problem with that dialogue is kind of why a lot of people feel disenfranchised by the climate change movement. They feel like they can't do anything to help the environment without completely changing their lives, or, you know, biking to work, or, you know, not eating meat. And while, yes, biking to work and not eating meat and doing certain things is better for the environment, and it's important to be conscious of that, telling people what they should and shouldn't do and making them feel bad for that is not the way to fix the environment. There are plenty of more positive, upbeat ways in encouraging the right action instead of making people feel ashamed for doing certain things or banning certain things for the sake of the environment. And if you look at, like, Kamala Harris saying banning fracking, or other candidates saying similar things, it's completely unrealistic as well, because you have, we're sitting in cars, we're going to work, and you can't just overnight take away cars from the roads and stop powering homes in the most vulnerable communities that rely on certain forms of energy. And that's even more so the case across the globe, in other countries that are even more reliant. And should we be shifting more and more to cleaner fuels? Yes. And even traditional energy companies realize that, like, most oil companies have been transitioning as much as they can to clean energy. But we can't just ban things and expect people to be appealed to this type of conversation.
So at the end of the day, and you and I have had this conversation before, but these types of statements, especially when you put them hour to hour to hour to hour for the 29 hours they did it on CNN last night, I mean, that does a disservice to the greater environmentalist movement.
It really does. And so on one hand, I would say the Democratic Party does have it right by holding a forum on these issues, which is something the Republican Party is not doing. And that's something to the fault of the Republican Party in regards to the lack of environmental conversation that we have mm-hmm. on a large scale. So that's one hand of it. But the larger part of it is the fact that these conversations from the Democratic Party's point of view are the only ones out there, and they're turning tons of people away from the conversation because they don't want to have to stop drinking their drinks or eating their food or, you know, driving their cars. And because people are more worried about their families and getting food on the table than what types of expensive alternatives they're going to have to afford. And again, there are plenty of ways to help the environment that I can talk for hours about that are much more upbeat. They're more plausible. They're opportunities that actually make sense, like nuclear energy, that the Democratic Party is not talking about. And then less and less people want to be a part of the conversation. So there's an opportunity that they have squandered, and the Republican Party is also to blame for not even having those conversations and countering with our own ideas as conservatives. But it is disappointing to see them go down that rabbit hole and, again, squander an opportunity to talk about meaningful climate policy.
Well, the good news is you and I on the show very frequently have these conversations, and just as importantly, the American Conservation Coalition, they're also having these conversations. If you want to learn more about the ACC, go to acc.eco, acc.eco, and learn more about the American Conservation Coalition and how a lot of these policies can be advanced and in a lot of ways are already being advanced by conservatives. If you want to care about the environment but not embrace sort of the fringe left-wing views, go to acc.eco. Benji Backer is their president and founder. Thank you so much for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Okay, appreciated the conversation. Thanks, Jason.
Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
So, real quick, In-N-Out is not coming to Washington State. It's not coming to Tukwila. Tukwila PD, God bless them. I love everything about cops. I will always support cops. There will never be a time in which someone accuses me of not backing the blue. However, Tukwila PD, some bad detective work. Or really, they jumped the gun before actually doing the detective work. They posted on Facebook a photo of an In-N-Out mobile truck. And it was kind of hanging out in the area. And they were like, ooh, some suspicious activity. Maybe we're about to get our first In-N-Out burger. It's going to be right here in Tukwila. People's hopes got really, really high. People got really, really excited about the idea of an overrated burger coming to the Tukwila area, and then they found out after they did in fact do some detective work that actually it was driving to British Columbia, Vancouver specifically, for some kind of an event. And so all of the support dashed people not excited anymore, all because of them jumping the gun. Tukwila PD, you let a lot of burger fans down. For everyone who was really excited, don't worry. We've got way better options than In-N-Out. Just stop with this In-N-Out nonsense. Go to Dick's. Go to Burger Master. If you want a really good burger, the best burger in all of the land, Henry's Tavern. There's one in Bellevue. There's one in Seattle. Go there. They've got good burgers. Go to Lil Woody's. I like Lil Woody's. In-N-Out. Stop that nonsense. Stop it with the In-N-Out. 1-800-465-8770. Join the conversation on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Progressive activists are hoping to reshape the military essentially in their image. And that means installing safe spaces. It includes accusations of microaggressions and, of course, an attack on so-called hypermasculinity. It's the topic of a brand new book. It's called Stand Down, How Social Justice Warriors Are Sabotaging America's Military. It's out right now. And the author, James Hassan, is a former captain in the U.S. Army. He's received the Bronze Star Medal in Afghanistan. He's a frequent contributor to the Washington Examiner and the Federalist, and he happens to be joining me right now. James, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you very much for having me, Jason.
So how did the Obama administration put the military down this path? Because your book focuses on their impact.
Yeah, I absolutely do. Well, it stems from a fundamental disagreement between men and women who serve in the military and the progressive activists who were in the Obama administration who were imposing policies down onto the military. So for these activists, for the Obama administration, the military was just a blunt force tool to drive broader social change rather than a institution that should simply be focused on preparing to fight and win the nation's wars. So, and these changes occurred across all branches and at all levels. And really, it stems from the top, beginning with the secretaries of the Army, Navy, Air Force, the undersecretaries beneath them. And the military is an authoritarian institution by necessity and by design. So the men and women in the military really didn't have a lot of say in this matter.
So from your perspective, how did this all manifest itself?
Well, I'll give you a few examples. So one would have been the Obama administration's policy that allowed service members to serve according to their gender identity versus the standards designed for their biological sex. There were also changes to the composition of infantry units from all male to gender neutral. And then there are some of the things that you mentioned, some of the cultural changes that played out farther away from the scenes and from the public eye, but are no less damaging.
Well, one point that you make, and I hope you'll give us a little bit more details on this, presentations about teaching commanders about quote unquote male pregnancy.
Yeah. So that that was something that really happened, and that was in the immediate aftermath of the Obama administration's announcement that people could serve according to their gender identity versus the standards for their biological sex. They implemented essentially a force-wide initiative to train and educate everybody about how to go about interacting with and the new policies for transgender service members. And for commanders, that included a presentation, one of the vignettes was about a soldier who identified as female, identified as male, and then ended up having a male pregnancy, to use the terms that they used, and how commanders should go about dealing with this male pregnancy. An interesting thing about this is, time is not a fungible asset. You have only a certain amount of time before, that you can train before you go downrange. And so if you're spending your time teaching commanders about male pregnancy or about, how to properly deal with situations in open bay showers or any of the other examples, then you can't spend that time training and focusing on preparing your guys.
Yeah.
And I can say that one of the first thoughts that entered my mind when I arrived in Afghanistan, and I think any leader will tell you the same, is, you know, when your boots to the ground, you think, okay, are my soldiers ready for this? Are we prepared? Have we done enough? And that feeling and those questions made me resent intensely all of the time that we had to direct to doing things like, you know, PowerPoint trainings on social justice issues versus simply preparing to fight.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Captain James Hassan. His book is Stand Down, How Social Justice Warriors Are Sabotaging America's Military. It's out right now. You can get it at Amazon. Is there any evidence to suggest that any of this actually put members of the military in harm's way any more than they normally would when they go to war?
Yeah, I would say, and really what the evidence is that it will continue to do so going forward. Because right now you're fighting kind of a low-intensity conflict in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
But where these changes will really play out is if we have to go to another large-scale war like North Korea or Iran or China. I'm going to give you one anecdote about that and then one example explaining what I mean. So one of the anecdotes I cite in my book is a two-star general that I interviewed who spent most of his career in the special operations community. Had served for over 30 years, and he turned down a promotion to 3 stars right at the end of the Obama administration's second term because, in his words, he didn't want to be responsible for lives that could be lost due to these policies if we get in another large-scale war. And one example of just a very practical example of how this plays out is that the Marine Corps did a year-long study when the Obama administration was against the Marines' will, trying to create gender-neutral infantry units. And they said, hey, just give us a year. And they studied the performance of the all-male infantry squads versus the gender-neutral infantry squads on just a wide array of tactics. And they measured every last little bit of data. And what they found is that the all-male squads outperformed the gender-neutral squads over 80% of the time. But what that looks like is that the gender-neutral squads, for instance, took up to 178% longer to pull an incapacitated Marine from a vehicle. Mm. So if you're downrange and that vehicle is on fire, when seconds can mean the difference between life and death, then the minutes can be deadly. And really want to emphasize that this isn't about the right politics or the wrong politics. It's not about whether you're conservative or liberal. It's simply that the military should be this one unique institution in our society that is apart from all that, is just left out of the culture wars because we're sending them into harm's way, and we owe it to them to only adopt policies that maximize their chances of success and to reject those that don't.
But at what point, you know, just from you as with your experience, at what point do you say, okay, maybe there is a reason to change things to hit a greater good of acceptance? So if we're at a time where you know, we're not allowing African Americans to serve in the military, obviously that is a clear mistake and there's no data to back it up. But maybe, you know, at the time, someone would say, oh, well, you know what, we might be shaking things up a little bit too much. So where do you draw the line of what is morally right and just versus, you know, what's best for the troops?
Absolutely. So I think the best way to explain that is that everybody who is qualified to serve should serve, or should at least have the chance to serve. And so that shouldn't depend on your orientation. That shouldn't depend on your race. It doesn't depend on your gender. It none of those things. But the overarching principle should be that you have to serve and meet the standards that the military sets. So you conform to the military and not vice versa. The military doesn't conform to you. And that's, to be honest, that's actually the policy that the Trump administration's transgender policy puts forward. People are, you know, you're free to be open about your gender identity. You're free to live however you want. And the only requirement is that when you're in uniform and when you're on duty, you have to meet the physical standards designed for your biological sex. And just to explain what that means, the Army and, you know, the military in general has very specific physical readiness standards, like body composition, you know, body fat percentage, among other things, for designed for males and females. So if you have an 18-year-old female soldier with 21% body fat, you're considered fit for duty. But if you have an 18-year-old male soldier with 21% body fat, you're considered a liability and you're non-deployable. But under the Obama administration's policy, you could be an 18-year-old soldier who is biologically male and has 21% body fat. But if you identify as female, that soldier would be considered fit for duty when, according to the standards designed for your biological sex, he wouldn't be, or when he otherwise would not be. So I think that's where you draw the line.
Yeah, so in a way, it's not just putting that person's safety at risk, but also the safety of anyone who serves alongside them.
Right, right, and also that person's safety as well. I think that's a good point.
Yeah. The name of the book, again, it's called Stand Down, How Social Justice Warriors Are Sabotaging America's Military. The author is Captain James Hassan. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really do appreciate it. It's a fascinating conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Absolutely. You are listening to The Jason Rancho. Again, name of the book, Stand Down, How Social Justice Warriors Are Sabotaging America's Military. You can buy it right now at Amazon. Go there now, buy this book, check it out. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Don't forget, if you don't have the app, well, that's a mistake. Text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send it so you can stream the show and the station wherever it is you find yourself. And if you miss any moment of the show, you can also get the podcasts, both from this show, Saul Spady's show, on the app. So just text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. Two male students at Lacey Township High School in New Jersey posted photos of guns on Snapchat. And on one of the snaps, which if you're not familiar with it, it only lasts about 24, I think it's 24 hours. It said, if there's ever a zombie apocalypse, you know where to go. Where to go is at a gun range that the kid took this photo at. Didn't mention the school at all. And yet, as a consequence, when their school became aware of the snaps on these two kids' account, they were suspended for 3 days apiece. Apparently, some parent had heard about the photos, told the school about it because the parent is an idiot, and the school decided to go ahead and suspend. Now, that's obviously a very clear violation of the First Amendment rights of these students. It had nothing whatsoever to do with school. It was taken off campus, it was taken outside of school hours, and frankly, even if that wasn't the case, it would still be protected. Now, in this case, the ACLU is doing what they should always be doing, which is focusing their attention on what they were founded on, which is promoting free speech. And they've decided to take on the case on behalf of these kids, locally there in New Jersey, suing the school to get this expunged from their records. Now, it is always important to fight back against these instances of government overreach as a public school. It's always important to push back at this, even though I know that sometimes, you know, when you're talking about your own kid, let's say you live in Bellevue or Sammamish or Issaquah, and you've got a certain situation that's going down that you kind of feel like your kid's rights are being trampled on, but it's kind of weird to want to go up against the school, and sometimes it feels really daunting. It's really important to shine a spotlight on it, because unless you continue to do that, unless we all continue to have each other's backs, this kind of nonsense is going to happen over and over and over again, and there's going to be countless other students who become victims of this kind of nonsense. But beyond that, this is the kind of thing that shows a bias that ends up leaking into the classroom, into the curriculum. Do you have any sense of confidence that at this particular school, the students there aren't being taught how dangerous and evil all guns are and how the Second Amendment is not really all that important? Because when something like this happens, it indicates, at least to me, an institutionalized bias against gun owners and gun ownership. And they're happy to use a kid to make their point. They're happy to propagandize a whole bunch of students with their personal political beliefs. This is why it's important to highlight. Because if we didn't find out about this, there's going to be another kid in another school, maybe here in Washington State, who's going to get impacted in the same exact way and doesn't feel like they have a case, doesn't feel like it's worth speaking up about. Because even folks on the left are supporting these two kids in New Jersey. Beyond that, this is also incredibly important for you as parents, for those of you who are parents, to stay truly engaged with your kids and what it is they're doing in the classroom. How are teachers talking to them about not just the subject matter that they're supposed to be talking to them about, but how they're talking about other things that they probably shouldn't be talking about? All of this comes up when you have just some basic conversations with your kids. You pick them up. Maybe right now you're picking up your kid from practice or drama. You're on the way home. You're listening to this show. Take a good opportunity. Well, wait till Ben starts and then you can turn down the radio just momentarily. Talk to your kid. Be more engaged with your kid. Find out what's going on their high school campus. Because I'm willing to bet a lot of this is going on and you do not realize it. Not only because you're not asking very specific questions of your kids, depending on their ages, might not be aware that it's happening. We know a strategy coming from the left is to change the language. That's how they try to win debates. When they can't win them on facts, they try to change the language. And then they try to stifle expression that they don't like. What do you think was the intent of suspending a kid for taking a Snapchat video or photo at a gun range? The intent is to tell them guns are bad and you better not be talking about guns ever, ever, ever again. That's the intent. That's dangerous. So let us all use this story as a reminder, not just to be more active with your kid, find out what it is they're learning in the classroom and how exactly they're learning it, but be more aware of the strategies that are being put out there by folks on the left to go after rights that you and I hold near and dear to our hearts, that they should hold near and dear to their hearts, but they don't. They don't like guns, so they go ahead and push their anti-gun nonsense. They get to be anti-gun, they don't get to tell us that we have to be. And they sure as hell don't get to choose to punish students who don't happen to believe politically what they believe. Highlight this stuff. And if it's happening to you or your kid right now and you don't know what to do, send me an email. Go to ktth.com, click on that inbox, shoot me over an email, pardon the pun, or go to facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. You've been listening to AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side.